Okay. So today, continuation of last week, up to kings, prefects, and procurators. Now, in 6 BC, Judea was annexed by Rome into the Roman province of Syria. So from this point on, Rome had a physical presence in Judea. Their presence was a governor that's appointed, known as a prefect or a procurator, depending on the time period, originally called prefects. So the first prefect was 6 AD. Not all procurators issue coinage, and then the ones that did issue coinage did it in the name of the emperor that appointed them. So out of the 15 procurators, only about six issued coinage. So here's the first one, Herod Archelaus. The type of this one is, well, he's still a Herod, so you have the, of Herod is the inscription around the edge. But it's a, grapes and vines. This is a lepton, so this is the same kind of denomination as the widow's mite, although just issued 100 years later. And the reverse is, now it's actually a military type, which is interesting. So it's a military helmet. This particular coin's a little rough down here, but you can see the top of the helmet. Herod Archelaus and his successor, Coponius, weren't really all that biblically interesting. Not much happened during their rules, and they weren't really governors for that long a period, just a couple of years. But they were nominated by Augustus. For this particular kind of coin, too, you notice there's an L here, and then a lambda and a theta. Ways to date these coins, since they don't have the procurator's name on them, you know by the year that's on the coin when it was issued, so therefore you can tell who it really belongs to. So in this case, the lambda represents 30 and the theta represents 9. So we've heard in the past about Hebrew having numeric equivalents for the letters, so does Greek. So in this case, 30 and 9, it's year 39. So the 39th year of Augustus's rule, these are regnal dates, corresponds to AD 8 to 9. And this particular type has a little palm tree here. There we go. And the reverse type is an ear of barley. And it says, of Caesar on the edge. So these types are inanimate objects. So they could be plants, they could be, in this case, the military helmet. Yeah, well, that died again. Marcus Ambibulus, although also not particularly biblically interesting, he was the next one that issued coinage. So here it's a very similar type. I mean, you have the palm tree, and you have an LM. The L basically signifies that what's following is going to be a year. So in this case, it's year M. M corresponds to 40. So this is the year 40 of Augustus. So that's AD 10. And the reverse is also an ear of barley. So very similar type like the previous one.
Mean
Probably just plenty production. It's the what if the yearly barley represents something specific. Offhand, I do not know, but it seems to be a common type for Judean coinage. So if anyone has any other thoughts. Valerius Gratus, he is a little bit more interesting. A coin again, very similar, palm branch. And another date here too. So this is the epsilon, which is this character, is year 5, but he was nominated by Tiberius, so this is AD 18. Gratus is also not really mentioned in the Bible, but his contribution is that he nominated, well, he could appoint high priests. I guess it was the power of the procurators. The high priest he nominated was Caiaphas, so the one who condemned Jesus to death. So the reverse of the coin, was a little more explicit than the other ones. You actually have the TIB, so Tiberius. So Pontius Pilate, the procurator everyone knows. His coins are a little different. Oops, go back one here. This coin is also dated. It's a little hard to see on this particular one, but you have an L, an I, and a Z. So that corresponds to either AD 29 or 30. And it was minted in Jerusalem. Probably most of these produce were, but specifically this one was. So it's definitely a very biblical type. What's interesting is that he used non-Jewish symbols on his coins. So this particular one is called a ledis, this little curved thing here. So here's a little picture from Wikipedia. Basically, an auger would use a LIDUS to mark off an area in the sky for, say, birds to cross or other sort of signs to be shown. So it was a very pagan symbol that he used. So one of the many reasons that he was not particularly liked by people. Another coin of his, this one has three barley ears here. But the other side has a simpulum, which is this thing here, which is basically a ladle, a large ladle. So it was used also by pagan ceremonies where they could taste wine that they were going to use for sacrifice. So again, very pagan. Agrippa I, so back to a king. So he was a Herod as opposed to a procurator. And he's the one mentioned in Acts 12. So he killed James, imprisoned Peter, who escaped. The phrase that's the voice of a god was this Herod. And his coins look like that. So you have a 3 ears of barley, so kind of like Pilate's there, although Pilate's had drooping ears, where here's are 3 straight ears. And this was this little sigma character here. Not exactly a sigma, but close, a stigma character. So that corresponds to AD 41 and 42. And the reverse is a little canopy, actually. It's the support for it's a little hard to see, but you see the little fringes on the bottom of it. And he was the grandson of Herod the Great. So Antoninus Felix, another procurator. So he's, the connection is Paul, Acts 23 and 24. So his coins, it has crossed palm branches, and the L for the dates and the I delta. So this corresponds to year 14 of Claudius or AD 54. So he's the one that almost became the Christian? Yeah. So he's the one that I was almost convinced by Paul, but basically said, come back later. And the reverse of this coin is also a little more explicit. What's interesting is that it's actually in the name of the wife of Claudius. So it's not actually the name of the emperor, it's the name of the emperor's wife is what's on the coin. And Porcius Festus. So Festus succeeded Felix, and then Festus is the one who sent Paul to Rome. Unto Caesar thou shalt go. So there's Festus. You can read the N, the epsilon, and the rho, so N-E-R, Nero. He was appointed by Nero. And the reverse, you have Caesar again, Kaiser, and a palm branch. So the procurators were in charge of Judea until AD 66, when the Jewish War broke out. There were several rebellions. This was a big one. Depending on what you read, there's different sort of main causes. One cause I was reading that they were doing sacrifices, the Roman garrison didn't intercede, Jews were upset. Another one was that the procurator that followed Porcius Festus was Albinus, and Albinus was followed by Gessius Florus. And Florus was a particularly bad guy. He wanted to loot the temple, actually, of silver. He wanted 17 talents of silver, which, if you remember from the class last week, correspond to 1,400 of a modern silver bar, so he wanted lots of silver. Jews first tried to make fun of him, but then he started to send the troops in. He killed 600 Jews. They tried to protect the temple by blocking off all access to it, destroying bridges, and eventually that just led to the breakout of war. They issued coinage during the war. This particular one, the actual inscription, which is a little hard to read here, but actually says year 2. So there are 5 years worth of coinage, and they actually say what year they're from. This particular one's a pruta. There were coins up to shekels, which is the silver coin, again. They didn't make prutas for all of those years, but there are coins available from each of those years, and the shekels tend to be expensive, rare. So one side is the amphora, the other side is a vine leaf. So finally, the Jews lost. Temple was destroyed. Vespasian was the emperor at the time he took over from Titus, and he issued a series of commemorative coins for the victory. So this is denarius, or the denarii from last week being the sort of the main silver denomination of Rome. You can read Imp Caesar, Vespasianus. Again, Roman coins are nice because you can actually read them, because they're the Latin, so they're kind of English, so they're easy to decode, frequently. So this bigger one, issued AD 69, 70, probably 70. And the reverse is a female figure that represents Judea, and then this is a military trophy, where a trophy sort of signifies the winning of a major battle, and Judea in the excerpt. And there are other styles of coins that are similar symbolism, but just slightly different styles. So here's just a little collection of coins and then how they look compared to each other. Some of these you haven't actually seen yet. But that's a lepton and that's a pruta. So the pruta is twice the denomination of the lepton. That's a Roman denarius in comparison, so a little bigger. That's an Antonianus, which you'll see in a little while, which is a double denarius. That's the siglos, which you saw before, and that's the obol, so small silver and a little bigger silver. That's the equivalent, one that's equivalent of half the shekel. That's an as, which is also coming up, and that's a solidus, which is a Roman gold coin. Okay, so now we're kind of basically ending what's truly biblically related coinage. So here's a couple other topics. Diana. Diana is mentioned. I mean, you have the your great is Diana of the Ephesians, as Paul is preaching. The actual word for Diana is really Artemis, which is the Greek version of Diana. As you saw also last week, a lot of these God's goddess representations, they had equivalences in different pantheons. So in this case, Diana is the Roman name, where Artemis is the Greek name. But Artemis is actually the word that appears in the Textus Receptus. Going back a little bit, this is a denarius, but it's from the Roman Republic period, so before Augustus. At the time, the coins were actually named by the moneyer that coined them. So rather than an emperor, because it wasn't really a real emperor at the time, this is a denarius of L. Hostilius Acerna, 48 BC. This is a Gallic captive. So at the time, Rome was still expanding. So here they conquered part of Gaul, and that represents one of the captives they had taken. And there's a wind instrument here behind it, which is kind of an interesting type. But the reverse is Diana. So you can read El Hostilius Acerna along the side here. But that's Diana. She's carrying a staff and a stag. That's kind of her symbol, is the stag. A lot of the god goddesses personifications had sort of creatures or symbols that went along with them. So the stag is what has appeared with Diana. Here's another one. This one is a bronze coin from Lydia, which is, if you remember, the very first coinage from last week was created in Lydia. So this is the same area, although this is a bronze coin from much, much later. This is Faustina Junior. She was a Roman emperor's wife. And it was minted sometime between AD 161 and 180. The Roman provinces, if Rome didn't really have sort of direct control and they kind of absorbed an area that was previously under control of Greece, then it was considered sort of a province and they had sort of special coinage for it. So rather than the main Roman primary coinage, like the denarius and the other denominations, you would have local issues. And they would say have the city names on them or other kinds of denominations. So this is one of those. And the city name is Tabala in the region of Lydia. But the reverse here is the statue of Diana. So this is actually the statue of Diana with supports, the same one that was in the temple that Paul was. So when they say Diana of Ephesus, that is the statue of Diana of Ephesus. And Tabala, the city, is actually north of Ephesus, but still along the Aegean coast. So it's interesting that they would use a representation of something from Ephesus, although not being Ephesus themselves. So what's interesting is, well, on this coin, you can actually make out some detail. What it's actually showing is this. So when they say the many-breasted one, that's what they're talking about. it's very pagan. Yeah, one more Diana. So this is a Roman denarius, Julia Domna, so a little bit later than the previous coin, but back to Rome proper this time. So you can read her name, Julia, on it. But the reverse here is Diana again, but it's Diana Lucifera, so Diana Lightbringer. So, well, bringer of knowledge. So she's holding a torch. So Diana was definitely regarded. So this is still now, 200 AD era. So this is still, what, 150 years after Paul, and Diana is still revered as a as an entity, as, well, the light bringer. Yep. Mostly, yeah. There probably was some benefit of being a certain personage on the coin, because there were some that were, say, devalued when the next guy came in. But in general, it really was based on weight. So a certain amount of silver was worth a certain amount of copper, a certain amount of gold. As the empire went on, the coinage became more and more debased, or in the case of the copper coinage, smaller and smaller. So there were various changes of denomination or attempts to equate value. But yeah, it basically was what the coin physically was composed of. It was only really in modern times that you've had representative coinage where there's nothing really backing what's really there. So fiat money, I believe, is the term. So, persecutions. Starting with, well, Nero. Actually, oops. Can't go backwards with that one. Roman emperors, starting with Nero, all the way to the basically the end of the empire. Before Constantine, put it that way. All of the pagan emperors. There were a lot of them. The ones that are highlighted in white here are the ones that Fox's Book of Martyrs separates as the 10 major persecutions. So starting with Nero and going to Diocletian. It looks like there are times when Christians weren't clearly persecuted by the emperors. Like between here and here was a 60-year period. The number of emperors, though, is kind of misleading. Because, for instance, well, here to here is only 14 years. In the middle of the Roman Empire, things got kind of turbulent. You would have people nominated to buy their troops in some far-off province, and then you would have to, there would be a war to try to see who would be the next emperor and all. So there's a lot of turnover, I guess you could say. So starting with Nero. The Nero, being the emperor when Paul was martyred, that's his claim to fame, I guess you could say. He also burned Rome. What's interesting is that, depending on what you read, Paul was martyred either in 64 or 67 AD. This coin was minted in 65, so this is the right time and place. The obverse shows Nero, legend, Nero Caesar. He has the title Germanicus. They often had titles whenever they conquered a particular region or did something particularly noteworthy. So in this case, he had victories in Germany, so he became Germanicus, if I recall correctly. Reverse of the coin is interesting too. This structure is called the Twin Janus. It was apparently an open-roofed building where the doors would be open if there was a war on and closed if it was peacetime. And Janus, if you remember back from the yesterday or last week's, Janus being the god of doors and beginnings and the two-faced god. So the next persecution is in 81 AD, is when the Foxes identifies it. The persecutions are hard to really describe. I mean, hard physically, just because there were such bad things happened. I mean, people really were persecuted. In this particular one, let's see what. Timothy was beaten until he was killed. Let's see, Flavia, the daughter of a Roman senator, was likewise banished to Pontus, and law was made that no Christian once brought before the tribunal should be exempted from punishment without renouncing his religion. So Domitian, you had a Domitian, definitely the Roman portrait. The legend's actually in the reverse direction this time. So you actually start here, Imperator Caesar, Domitian. And this one shows an anchor with a dolphin entwined around it. It's a little different. Third persecution was Trajan. let's see, Pliny wrote that there were thousands killed during the persecution, not being overly specific. So this particular coin was struck in 115 AD. The persecution itself was 108, so this was either during it or slightly afterward. Yeah, the Pliny just says there were many thousands of them daily put to death, of which none did anything contrary to the Roman laws worthy of persecution. So just by the fact of being Christian, they were killed. The reverse is interesting because it's Divus Pater Trianus, where Trianus, Elpius Trianus, was his father. So he's trying to deify his father as a god. And his father was a general under Vespasian in the Jewish War. So he was one of the people actually actively fighting in the Jewish War, defeating the Jews. Legio X Fratensis, there were a number of Roman legions. Legion 10 was one of the ones stationed in Judea. Fratensis actually means of the sea straits, because the legion in previous times, they guarded the streets of Messina. So a lot of the legions had sort of key names, sometimes even ones as odd as, you know, like the Legion whatever the Lucky. So Marcus Aurelius. Fox's Book of Martyrs gets very explicit talking about who was persecuted, when are these people. Felicitatis, an industrious Roman lady of considerable family and the most shining virtues, was a devout Christian. She had seven sons whom she had educated with the most exemplary piety. Januarius, the eldest, was scourged and pressed to death with weights. Felix and Philip, the next two, had their brains dashed out with clubs. Silvanus the fourth was murdered by being thrown from a precipice. And three younger sons, Alexander, Vitalis, and Marshall, were beheaded. The mother was beheaded with the same sword as the three latter. I mean, these are, when they say persecutions, they mean persecutions. So, Marcus Aurelius, the persecution was 162, according to Fox's Martyrs, Book of Martyrs. This particular coin is minted 164. He also has a title too, Armeniacus. So in Armenia, he had a military victory. And the reverse shows, you know, the emperor standing with, you know, sword and shield, very military type, showing that he's in charge. And the legend has a bunch of indications of his rule. So in a little bit, ways to date these coins. This particular coin is easier to date because of the titles of the emperor that are actually appearing on the reverse of the coin. So it's PMTRP, XVII, MPN2, COS3. Rome actually did use Roman numerals, as you might think. And a lot of legends were abbreviated in various ways. So PM means Pontifex Maximus. So we saw that from last week. So the head of the Roman religion, the state religion. TRP is a Trimensio Potestas, which is basically a civil authority. He could do things like convene the Senate or overrule the Senate's actions. He could execute capital punishment. This was something that he would be sort of an office that he would take repeatedly. So the time he took it relative to when he first started is also an indication of date. So in this case, the 18th time he did it corresponds to December 10th, AD 163. So that means this particular coin was dated 163 or sometime afterward, for however long he held that particular position. Continuing with the legend, IMP is Imperator, which means commander, although now we think of it as emperor, sort of more of a general kingship. But it was more of a victorious general, someone who's in charge of the military and has won victories. So the second time he was named that was 163 to 164. Also the consulship, that was sort of the highest office of the Roman Republic, and that kind of continued down into the empire. So his third consulship started March 7th, AD 161. So as a combination of all that, he was in his third consulship, which lasted a while. He was, the second time he was named Imperator, it was his 18th, Trebensian power. So by combining all that, well, it's got to be AD 164. So by reading the coin, even though it doesn't actually have a numeric date on it, you can figure out really when it's from, which is interesting. Okay, the fifth persecution, Septimius Severus. Race had boiled pitch poured upon her head and was then burnt, as was Marcella, her mother. Potiniana, the sister of Race, was executed in the same manner as Race had been, but Basilides, an officer belonging to the army, in order to attend her execution, became her convert. Basilides, being as an officer required to take a certain oath, refused, saying that he could not swear by the Roman idols as he was a Christian. Struck with surprise, the people could not at first believe what they had heard, but he had no sooner confirmed the same than he was dragged before the judge, committed to prison, and speedily afterward beheaded. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, read it one more time. It was just a long paragraph, so trying to get in. So, as another example of what happened during this persecution, Race had boiled pitch poured upon her head and was then burnt, as was Marcella, her mother. Potiniana, the sister of Race, was executed in the same manner as Race had been, but Basilides, an officer belonging to the army, in order to attend her execution, became her convert. Basilides, being, as an officer, required to take a certain oath, refused, saying that he could not swear by the Roman idols as he was a Christian. Struck with surprise, the people could not at first believe what they had heard, but he had no sooner confirmed the same that he was dragged before the judge, committed to prison, and speedily afterward beheaded. So she converted her jailer, basically, and then he was killed. Severus was a good military leader, though. He had lots of expansion of the empire. He even led a force into northern Britain and then fought the Picts, which is now basically Scotland. So he had a lot of military victories. The reverse here is Fortuna, another sort of a personification, fortune, good luck. So she's standing there with a rudder and cornucopia. So cornucopia basically being plenty, so good luck. Rudder is probably, you could go any direction, so you're kind of relying on fate to lead you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Christians during this time that are having to use these coins, if they're involved in commerce or being able to buy anything, they're having to use these coins that have these false gods on them, that are having these emperors that are slaughtering them. So they just think what must have been going through their minds and all during this time.
Yeah, it's back to even the temple tax, where you had to have a coin with Melkart, the Tyre city god, on it. And that's what you had to use for your Jerusalem temple tax, the only coin that they would accept. So, all this time there was you had to use, if you wanted to use currency at all, the currency of the ruling power, which was a very, very pagan. And as you mentioned, the people were actually actively persecuting you. You see their faces on the coins that you're using. So Maximinus, 235 was the next one. Here's another one. During this persecution raised by Maximinus, numberless Christians were slain without trial and buried indiscriminately in heaps, sometimes 50 or 60 being cast into a pit together without the least decency. So, one time. Yet during this persecution, raised by Maximinus, numberless Christians were slain without trial and buried indiscriminately in heaps, sometimes 50 or 60 being cast into a pit together without the least decency. And he was actually an interesting figure on his own. He was 8 feet 6 inches tall. He was the tallest Roman emperor. He could pull an ox cart. There was even a story of him actually punching out the teeth of a horse. So a very strong guy. He got a little crazy near the end, apparently. At the beginning, his troops were very for him in terms of him becoming emperor and following him, but he apparently got very paranoid near the end. And if you're a Roman emperor, you generally didn't have a good time of it. I mean, they did not have good lives on their own, too. So the reverse of this coin is Victoria, victory. So again, victory with a palm branch and a wreath. That's the typical representation. So generally it means that they've won a major battle or there's something that they've claimed to be the good for Rome. Trajan Dacius. He is the seventh persecution. Let's see, what's a good one here? Trypho and Respicius, two eminent men, were seized as Christians and imprisoned at Nice. Their feet were pierced with nails, and they were dragged through the streets, scourged, torn with iron hooks, scorched with lighted torches, and at length beheaded, February 1st, AD 251. Yeah, I mean, these were persecutions. So that was at least 3 years going on then from when it started. This particular coin was minted right at the time, AD 250, 251. This is also an Antoninus. So now it's a double denarius. So the empire is now starting to change their monetary forms. The denarius was starting to get, I guess, devalued a little bit. So now you have to have a coin which is worth twice that. It is now sort of the main circulating silver coin. And even this gets more and more debased over time. Just more and more silver is being pulled out of it, becomes more and more base metal. Yeah, the reverse of this, he's Trajan Dacius, so he's from Dacia. So he actually uses Dacia, a female representation of Dacia, and the legend Dacia on the coin. So he's kind of commemorating where he's coming from. I think, if I remember right, that was used as sort of like one of their battle standards, I mean, sort of leading them in military operations. Eighth persecution under Valerian. Yeah, just at Utica, a most terrible tragedy was exhibited. 300 Christians were, by the orders of the proconsul, placed around a burning lime kiln. A pan of coals and incense being prepared, they were commanded either to sacrifice to Jupiter or being thrown into the kiln. Unanimously refusing, they barely jumped into the pit and were immediately suffocated. So here's 300 people. Mm-hmm. Valerian himself, though, didn't have a good ending. But I'll get there. The reverse of this coin is, it reads Apollolini prop VG here. So propignori, notori. So it's to Apollo the defender. So Apollo being, one of the gods of Rome. Here he's holding firing a bow, an arrow. The Apollo was a representation that was referring to medicine, healing, light, truth, but also plague. So this coin was actually struck during the time of plague. So some of the coinage like this was actually struck for not just for the emperor to commemorate something, but for the emperor to try to ask for something, show that they were showing favor to a particular god, goddess. By this time, there is virtually no silver in here at all. So it is now extremely debased. So, and that's just a matter of a few years from when it was pure silver of the two persecutions ago. This one's interesting, too, for the artwork. That's actually the representation of Apollo. He's a cyclops. Well, it's something a little different. This is Shapur the First, and this is a Sasanian coin. The Parthian Empire, which was kind of the Iraq-Iran sort of Mideast kind of region, that was conquered by the Sasanians. And the Sasanians started to build up their empire and became a threat to Rome. So the legend here is a little blundered, but it says things like Mazda worshiper, he's a divinity, sacred beings. They were Zoroastrian, which means they were basically fire worshippers, but they believed in this Mazda, Ahura Mazda, as the sort of this main god. So the reverse of their coins from the early 200s is when they started issue coins, and they went through the early 600s, and the types were virtually identical. So in this case, it's a fire altar with two attendants. So, fire worship. So think of the biblical phrases of putting your children through the fire, that you shouldn't do that, and that's this kind of thing.
God that they
worship? Zoroaster apparently had decided there really was one single god, but it was, and it was called Ahura Mazda. So they were, from what I was reading, monotheistic, but it wasn't the Christian god. I didn't have a good one to show off, but yeah, so it shows this. This literally the head floating in the fire. So. But Shapur is interesting because, as Foxes says, it is here proper to take notice of the singular but miserable fate of the Emperor Valerian, who had so long and so terribly persecuted the Christians. This tyrant, by a stratagem, was taken prisoner by Shapur, Emperor of Persia, who carried him into his own country, and there treated him with the most unexampled indignity, making him kneel down as the meanest slave and treading upon him as a footstool when he mounted his horse. After having kept him for the space of 7 years in this abject state of slavery, he caused his eyes to be put out, though he was then 83 years of age. This not satiating his desire for revenge, he soon after ordered the body to be flayed alive and rubbed with salt, under which torments he expired, and thus fell one of the most tyrannical emperors of Rome and one of the greatest persecutors of Christians. So, Roman emperors don't have good ends either. Aurelian, ninth persecution. This particular coin, it shows Aurelian. This is the style here with the long neck is kind of an odd thing that Aurelian had. Get the idea. Similarly bad things. The reverse here shows the soul as the Roman sun god. You see these little rays coming out of his head, which was kind of soul's representation of sort of sun rays. Here's called Oriens, so Oriens, ABG. So these types get more and more militaristic as the empire goes on. So here you have Sol holding a whip, you have two captives. You start to get more interesting things down here too in the exarch. In this case, the XXI shows that it's one part silver to 20 parts copper as the composition of the coin. So this is still an Antonianus, but now it's basically effectively a very debased copper coin.
21 stamp?
That it's the ratio of copper to silver as the composition of the coin. So, 10th persecution, Diocletian. This seemed to go on for a while. It started in 303. A city of Phrygia, consisting entirely of Christians, was burnt and all the inhabitants perished in the flames. Racks, scourges, swords, daggers, crosses, poison, and famine were made use of in various parts to dispatch the Christians. An invention was exhausted to devise tortures against such as had no crime, but thinking differently from the votaries of the superstition. So, I mean, it was significant. In this particular coin, this is now a phallus, which is a new denomination, basically a large copper coin. The reverse is kind of a neat one in this one. This is moneta. So, if you think moneta, money, so kind of the representation of currency. So holding scales and holding a cornucopia. So prosperity, but balance. At this time, too, they start to add specific text in here for where the coins are minted. So in this case, it's SIS, which is Sicilia. Now it's known as Sisak, Croatia, is the place. Okay, so the end of the persecutions, but a few other types that are around those eras. So, serpents. Thinking Christianity, a serpent isn't really a positive image. Yeah, it should be as gods knowing good and evil. Serpents were a little different, though, in pagan coinage. So this particular one, this was minted in Nicaea. So think, the Council of Nicaea is helping to define Christian beliefs in the early 300s. This was minted about 50, 75 years earlier, but it shows a serpent in the very center of the coin here, the open mouth. And you can read, it's basically Nicaea in Greek around the rim. So serpents were not considered a bad thing. Here's another one, numbers. So this one shows a serpent and a three-legged table, and the serpent curling up the table. This one's also from Nicaea. Here's one too that it shows a coiled serpent, but it's actually got these rays around it. It's called Nimbit. So it's basically a serpent with a halo. So serpents were not bad things. And this one's from Philippopolis, and it's a little cut off in the coin, but you can read the PHIL around there, which is now in Bulgaria. Yeah, those were the mid-3rd century. The first two were Severan coinage, so Septimius Severus or his family. That one probably was too, although we can't tell from the obverse. This one is slightly later, Elagabalus. He was actually named after Elagabal, the religion that he followed in the god. He was a particularly bad guy, but the reverse type is interesting. The legend here is a Salus Antoniania ABG, Antoniani, where Salus Asclepius was the god of medicine. So you can think of it's called the Rod of Asclepius, where you have a wooden staff with a serpent curling around it, as you see as a symbol of medicine, even nowadays. Salus was the Roman name for one of his daughters. The Greek name for Salus is Hygieia, so think hygiene. So basically goddess of health and good living. But she's holding a serpent and feeding it from a patera. So again, serpents are not bad things. But it was considered, well, the serpent shedding its skin, well, that's, you know, rebirth, fertility. So I was using that kind of image. So. Yeah, I don't know if it was. Yeah, I don't know if it was truly in a resurgence at this particular time, but there's a lot of examples around now. The serpents were on coins for a long time, but there's a lot of instances here. Yeah. even here too, this is back to the Roman Republic time, so Roman denarius, 78 BC. So this is Bacchus, you know, the god of wine on the obverse, but the reverse. You've seen quadrigas, like if you watch any kind of Roman movies where you have the chariots pulled by horses. This is a chariot pulled by two serpents. So they like serpents. there are other styles like this, too, where they're pulled by other kinds of creatures, not just horses. But not this one was particularly interesting. And this is this particular goddess is Ceres, which is the Roman goddess of growing plants. So the word cereal comes from Ceres. Another interesting type, this is actually from Alexandria. It's an Egyptian coin, but that's Hadrian. So this is when Rome was in control of Egypt. But the reverse shows the Sphinx. So you have the Sphinx here, you have the wings, there's a paw on a wheel. So the Sphinx has been compared to cherubim, since it's a mixture of different kinds of creatures. So it's not exactly a biblical type, but interesting.
Approved government issued coins.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they were. Mm-hmm.
Were they minted in mass quantities?
It depends on the coin, but a lot of them were, like especially the bronze coins. Generally, the bronzes of the 4th century, early 4th century, and the silver coins of the mid 3rd century tend to be very common, at least commonly found nowadays. Like even that one with Salus on it. I mean, you can see the grade on it where it's very, very high quality. So they likely did mint them in extreme quantities. But it kind of depends on the time of the empire, too. I mean, when the economy wasn't as good, or you'll have an emperor that wouldn't necessarily rule for very many years, then you might not find a lot of that particular, you know, type or person. So. I don't think there's an official one, although there have been like surveys of existing collections. Like there's a book series called Roman Imperial Coinage, where it catalogs Roman coin types, and it gives a rarity scale based on how many were found in collections at the time when the books were written. So it's not really a true measure of how many originally minted, because you don't really know, but it does give an indication of how many currently survive. So chances are how many currently survive are related to how many originally minted, although there might be special circumstances where they might have only minted 50 of them, but that survives as a hoard that was found, you know, where they made a million of them and they all got lost. You know, so there's not directly a translation, but we kind of guess. So, Constantine. So the types we've seen up to now have been, you know, prior to about 300. So Constantine as an emperor, he was originally a pagan, you know, emperor, of course. This particular coin, coin of Constantine, can read his name on it again. This was minted in what's now Trier, Germany. You can read Constantius, Constantine around it. And the reverse is, well, it's Sol. So again, you have the radiate, you know, rays, you know, coming out of the crown, sort of. And the legend is Soli Invicto Comedy. So where Comes means companion. So he's saying that, well, basically the sun god is his friend. So.
It's a lot smaller than the Diocletian.
Yes, that's something to point out. The Diocletian phallus was about the half dollar size. This is more like a quarter size. So that's only been about 15, 20 years later, and even the copper coins are now reducing in size. So as the empire goes on, the quality and the types of coins get, you know, smaller and smaller and smaller, more and more debased. Well, he battled Maxentius, another emperor, sort of for control. There was a battle of the Milvian Bridge, which was in 312. On the eve of the battle, he had a vision of seeing a symbol of Christ in the sky, and then a further dream saying, put this on your shields and then fight under this. This particular event, the phrase he had heard was you buy the sign, you shall conquer. So this Cetic coin of Constantius II, one of his kids, so this is AD 350, a little bit later, but he actually made a coin that commemorates this. So Hoc Signor Victor Eris, you buy the sign, you shall conquer. So it shows the emperor being crowned by victory. But the standard, it's a little hard to see here, but that's got a Christogram on it. So this particular event, well, he's starting to use Christian symbols. And this one was also minted in Sicca from the SIS below. Yeah, it's kind of an interesting combination because you have the emperor standing here in cape and sort of emperor regalia. And you have victory, again, the personification of victory from the pagan style. And you have the wreath here. He's being crowned with it. But he's holding what's called the labarum, which is a standard with a Christogram on it. So on this particular coin, it's a little hard to see here. But this is a Christian symbol, even though he's being crowned by victory. But Constantine himself, I mean, he had an edict which allowed any religion to be followed in Rome. So he basically ended the Christian persecutions. And he himself seemed to claim to be a Christian after he was about age 40 or so. So there's an interesting type here where he's basically looking up to heaven. This is the only Roman kind of coin where you have this kind of view on it. And this was from 328 AD. And the verse type is but it still has a sort of a semi-pagan type where you have victory seated on this little chair here. So, and then when he died, they also issued coins to commemorate his death. So he's in a little shroud here. And then it's actually DV here, so Divus, so he's, has died. But the reverse is him in a quadriga, so at least it's pulled by horses this time, four horses. But it's the hand of God reaching down for him, and he's reaching up to the hand. So it starts to be a Christian type. And this was now minted in Constantinople, the CONS. Another notable thing about Constantine is that he set up another capital of Rome at what became known as Constantinople when he died. So you had the Rome as the primary capital, but now the secondary capital at Constantinople. So a little later, empire coins. Valens came in a little later, so 367 to 375. But now they start to use Christian symbols on them. So there's the Cairo again. So there's a symbol. It's on the standard, so that's the labarum. But you have these odd combinations, though. So he's still using Christian symbol now, but the legend is Gloria Romanorum, the glory of Rome. And, it's the emperor, pulling on a barbarian by his hair. So... yeah, so it's Barbarians for Christ or something. So, and again, this was minted in Sicca. There's another one, Constantius II. So another, a son of Constantine. Here you have the Christograms on labrum on either side of the emperor standing. So still using the same sort of symbol. But it's also Concordia Militum, so basically a friend of the army. So it's again a combination. Constantius II. Another sort of combination where you have the emperor standing on a galley. So he's on a boat. The galley is being piloted by victory. So you see the wings here, victory, and the rudder. And he's holding victory also in his hand. So he's, say, winning a battle or being in charge. But he's holding a labrum with a Christogram. So kind of a combination again. And Feltem Preparatio. So the legend is basically good times are here again. So kind of saying everything's fine with the empire. This is Aelia Flaccilla, so again, another woman on a coin. And here you have victory inscribing a Cairo on a shield. So as time goes on, and they start using the Christogram more and more often. But things changed a little bit with Julian II. He kind of went back to pagan types, worshiping pagan gods again. So even though the empire was now moving to be Christian, he kind of reverted. So, the Apis bull. So this goes back to an Egyptian type where Osiris, is one of his personifications, was in bull form as Apis. So think the golden calf, same sort of idea. So, and two stars above. But Theodosius, he succeeded Julian, and his big claim to fame, he actually had a series of edicts which made Christianity the Roman religion. So he also did certain things like enforced the ban against sacrifices in temples. Pagan temples. The eternal fire in the temple of Vesta in the Roman Forum was extinguished. The Vestal Virgins were disbanded. Those practicing witchcraft and auspices were punished. He actually even canceled the Olympic Games in 393 because it was presumably non-Christian. He reared the ban of blood sacrifice. He closed temples and allowed churches to be built on top of the rubble when they were torn down. So. Mm-hmm. Right, yes. Yeah, these are pagan temples, temples to all these other gods and goddesses that you see in all these other coins. Mm-hmm. The first letters of the name of Christ, and depending on which source you read, it was either the symbol that Constantine saw in the vision or something related. So taking the first two Greek letters and then sort of overlaying them on top of each other. Yeah. And the last one, so Honorius, this was almost the effective end of the empire. This is a Solidus, Roman gold coin. There had been the Aureus was the gold coin for most of the earlier empire, and then it became a Solidus after one of the monetary forms. So this is Solidus, shows the emperor, shows the diadem. If you might remember too, the coin from Herod, which had the X and the diadem around it, with the diadem showing kingship, is the same kind of diadem. The interesting thing is the reverse. So you have Honorius standing, he's holding victory, on a globe, he's holding a military standard, I'm in charge, I'm winning, he's got his foot on a captive. The legend is Victoria, AVGG, victory. But this little RV here, he had already moved his capital from Milan, where it had moved from Rome, and now to Ravenna. So he's basically fleeing the Goths that are approaching Rome. So Alaric I sacked Rome in 410. And this was the half of the empire that Honorius was in charge of. So even though you have this type saying, well, I'm in charge, victory, being the captives, he's the one running away from the Goths. So it's political spin from 1600 years ago, which I think is interesting. So, and on this coin too, there's three G's. They used a G for each of the concurrent ruling Augusti. So he was emperor, and Arcadius and his father at the time, Theodosius actually was his father, were also co-ruling at this time. So it shows that there were really three emperors, Augusti, at the same time. Yes, as a lot of the later coins really were, too, like the Feldherr Apparatio saying, well, everything's fine, basically. Yeah. Things start to change. This actually isn't too horrible, but it's like the big eyes now, and it's a slightly different style than before. As time starts to pass from now, it gets worse and worse as the empire truly falls. You basically have 476, I think it was, the last emperor was really deposed. You have the Goths, running rampant. You have the Roman pullout from Britain, so Britain kind of falling into the Dark Ages. You do have the Eastern Empire still continuing. So the Western Empire, with Rome as its capital, has fallen. Goths have sacked it. The Eastern Empire, with Constantinople as its capital, still continues. And then that becomes the Byzantine Empire. So if you think Greek Orthodox Christianity, that's kind of where it was. So, and that was the last one for today. So if you have any questions or anything.
The difference of 300 years, the coins are so much more preserved. Just that 300-year period made a big difference.
Yeah, it kind of depends on the coin, too. And you can always find bad examples of anything or nice examples of things. The gold coins tend to be nice, probably because they didn't circulate a lot. If a denarius corresponds to basically a day's wage, and there were, 20, 72? I forget now. How many denarii in a solidus? Yeah, but there still would have been a month or more of worth. So you probably didn't have a lot of these really circulating in terms of ordinary people. maybe more things in the emperor's treasuries, that kind of thing. I think I remember right, too, that a lot of these actually survived to even modern times, actually as bank deposits, kind of, that they're, you know, sort of core amounts of value of some places, just because they were so prevalent. Yes, actually, for the really worn ones, probably even still. But the nicer example, the more in demand it is. I mean, it really is supply and demand. So if you have lots and lots of people wanting it, even if it is a relatively common coin, it'll still go up in value. Solidi in general are not particularly rare, although that's still, you know, $300 or so probably for that coin. About 300, at least. It depends on the amount of gold. It's probably gone up now. Nowadays, okay. Well, I made a good purchase then a while back. you can have ones that have newest amount of values, which are much, much more, like that Derek from last time. I mean, that's, you know, $2,000 coin. From last time when you didn't see it, but the Derek from the Persian Empire. So you can have rare ones that are, you know, that or even more still. So there generally is a numismatic value on top of the actual metal amount. Yeah, it's fairly small. It's probably about the size of a nickel, I guess, so fairly thin. So there's not a lot of gold in it, but for what it is. Oh, yeah, so Chip has actually examples. Well, the one that's being passed around is that coin, and then Chip has other ones. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not particularly large coins. But Rome is, I mean, for coin collecting, Roman coins are, I don't want to say ubiquitous, but if you want to pick an ancient empire to collect, coins of Rome are everywhere, especially, again, the 4th century bronzes and 3rd century, you know, silvers. I mean, you can get a 4th century bronze for, you know, $20 will get you a nice one. So they're, you can find them in junk boxes at dealers' tables. So, yeah. The kinds of things that people find in farm fields. Like, there's a program called Time Team, which is a British program about archaeology. And a lot of times they're digging up people's gardens or just, you know, out in fields, and they find Roman coins. You know, so they're pretty easy to come across.
You know, as I'm going through this, I can't help but think, you know, when the Pharisees were questioning Christ and about whom they should pay tribute, and he asked for a coin, and he said, "Well, whose image is on that coin?"
Mm-hmm. And that was Tiberius.
Yeah, and then it was, well, you pay tribute to whom tribute's due. Mm-hmm. They were having to use those pagan coins. They were having to use those coins of those leaders at that time. To me, that's just fascinating. And I look at this is history. And as these people were holding this in their hands and they were using this, and it just brings it so much more to life. So I really appreciate that. I enjoyed that. Any other questions for Charles this evening?
Yeah, can I get a copy of your PowerPoint?
Sure, yeah. I've actually put them up online. I need to revisit this one, but there's a website, coins.calkinsey.com, and then /Bible study, and that's where all these are, including the audio of last week and hopefully the audio of today. Right there, calkinsey.com, basically last name, first initial. So, but I can write that up for you afterward. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.